I would trade him if I could.
I don't think many people liked it, to be honest. I don't care.
Last year didn't really do well for anybody.
We should probably delete all of this.
By the laws of the podcast gods, we owe an answer.
Reporting the Highline with Rabbi in Red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car or in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the Highline.
Hello, Rapids fans. This is Holding the Highline with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. It is Monday, October 19th, 2020. My name is Matt Pollard. The Rapids are about to play their first game of the month on Saturday. Maybe. Sadio Mane is currently shaving his arm hair so that he can be onside the next time Liverpool plays Everton. Four Eastern Conference teams have clinched a spot in the MLS Cup playoffs. The Supporters' Shield will no longer be awarded this year. And we unfortunately have to discuss some bad news regarding a beloved fellow American soccer podcaster. I'm joined now by my best friend in soccer and someone who hopefully will be better at discussing the bigger picture problems in the world and how we make sense of them and come to terms with them, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
How's it going, Matt?
I'm okay. I went on a hike on Sunday. That was obviously very fun. And I know, we were talking offline, Mark. We are both very, very coy and very cautious about bringing up the fact that outside of the Rapids, when it comes to as two Los Angeles, California natives born and raised for the most part, we are very cautious to bring up or acknowledge or extensively discuss, us rooting for the teams from Los Angeles that are not the Rockies and are often in direct opposition to the Rockies. And obviously I was watching yesterday evening with very, very, very bated breath as the Dodgers completed their 3-1 comeback against the Atlanta Braves behind several fantastic defensive plays and an absolute bomb from Cody Ballinger. And we'll see what happens in the Fall Classic that'll be kicking off less than 24 hours from now.
Yeah, fun fact for our listeners who vaguely pay attention to baseball or vaguely pay attention to sports. I was 11 years old when the Los Angeles Dodgers last won the World Series in 1988. And the week that the Dodgers clinched the NLCS against the Mets, my dad told me, he said, actually it was like the day before, he said, if the Dodgers beat the Mets, I'm going to take you to the World Series. And I said, what? And he goes, yeah. I was like, okay. So the day of game one of the 1988 World Series, I said to my dad, so where are our tickets? He said, I don't have tickets. We're going to buy them from a scalper. He said, I have $1,000, and if we can't get tickets for $1,000, we have to go home. I was like, okay. So we went and we got tickets.
$1,000 was a lot of money in 1988.
$1,000 was a lot of money. So we got to the stadium and there was a scalper there, and it was my dad said, how much? The guy said, I have two. He said, how much? I said, he said 250 each. My dad said, well, take them. And he bought them, and he turned to me and he goes, we have $500 for popcorn and peanuts. And then in the bottom of the ninth with two out, Kurt Gibson hit a home run off a Dennis Eckersley
full count back
slider. And in one of the only, I think, walk-off home runs in World Series history, to that point anyways. I think there have been several since then. But yeah, and the rest is history. I mean, it was kind of a legendary moment. And, you know, it's a very, very strange feeling when you figure out at some point in your later adolescence or your early young adulthood that you have witnessed the greatest sporting moment of your life at the age of 11, and it'll never get better than that. I mean, I've had other moments that were pretty great. I mean, honestly, the 2016 Western Conference semifinal, you know, when the Dodgers beat the Galaxy on the Dodgers, the when the Rapids beat the Galaxy on penalties and Tim Howard stopped a key one. I mean, like, that was up there. That was really good. And that building was rocking the way Dodger Stadium was in 1988. But, you know, it's the number of games like that are few and far between.
Yeah, no, well said, Mark. I mean, you know, to that point, you know, something that I've certainly been thinking about, you know, because of, you know, in withdrawal of not being able to watch soccer or certainly, you know, attend matches, certainly, you know, it'll be, you know, a month and one day this Saturday, assuming the Rapids don't have another positive COVID test, that the Rapids will play Sporting Kansas City this Saturday, October 24th, month and a day since their September 23rd. Game against the San Jose Earthquakes. I've been playing Mountain Road on YouTube when I've been working or doing things around the apartment, Mark, and kind of thinking about the, you know, the line, all my memories start from Toronto. And obviously, as fantastic as that is, you know, like it's going to be an uphill battle for the Rapids to win a second MLS Cup. And the fact is, you know, that is the short of winning CCL, which I don't know that an MLS team is that close to right now, even, you know, pandemic notwithstanding, let alone that the Rapids are in that position, you know, like the, you know, the only thing that they can do is get a second one. It's never going to be as glorious or fulfilling for fans who were there in 2010, as the, you know, as that first one was. And so in that, all the Rapids can do is kind of chase that same, climb that same proverbial mountaintop. And the fact is those moments are few and far between. I had a very good, quote from one of my sports friends a couple years ago, Mark. I don't remember the context, but basically he said, I think he was talking about it in a NFL context, and he said, there will always be at least one team with a 32-year drought from winning the Super Bowl. And as we get increasing in MLS size, the fact is, you know, obviously some teams haven't existed for the full 25 years of MLS, but, you know, the limit as time goes to infinity and the number of teams in MLS goes to X, let's say that's 32 for the sake of comparison, is that there will always be a team who has gone at least 32 years without winning MLS Cup. And so, okay, maybe we could say extrapolate that out to 10 or 11 years as the absolute minimum if we're counting the Supporters Shield and the Open Cup. But so, you know, you have to cherish these moments, and they're, you know, sports is one of the beautiful things in that there are these like generational transcendental moments that people kind of universally experience in their own moment that they can relate to other people. And so I know there's plenty of Dodgers fans who can absolutely relate who were there, Mark, on that night at Dodger Stadium. I was a concept, folks. I was negative 18 months old. So I did not get to experience that. So we'll see if, we'll see what happens, with the Blue Crew in the next, week and change. So, but, speaking of kind of transcendental, like universal, hard hitting something that resonates with a community in a positive or a negative way, Mark. I don't know if you've listened to last night's episode of the Total Soccer Show. Mark and I have been longtime listeners of that show, folks. It's one of the great American soccer podcasts that I think exists, you know, probably top five, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of quality, breadth of content that they cover, and one of their hosts, Daryl Grove, the Englishman, the Wolverhampton Wanderers expert, who you and I, Mark, both had conversations with upon the Rapids signing. Jack Price has been battling stomach cancer for about the past 2 years or so. He was in a clinical trial earlier this year. That didn't go well, and that trial ended up ending, and recently he had surgery to see whether or not they could buy some time or see what else could happen, and his doctors and medical advisors have informed him and his family, and now Taylor Rockwell, the other host, has informed the greater TSS listenership that there's nothing more that can be done, and Daryl is going or has arrived home back to Richmond, Virginia, and has begun hospice care. 2020 sucks, Mark. Cancer sucks. This is a I can relate to that in listening to other people's podcasts in the same way some of you listeners have approached me in real life, is the sense that there's a sense of community and a sense of relationship, even if you never actually meet that person in real life. And I've always tried to cherish and be very present in those moments when one of you comes up to try and talk to me, because as far as you're concerned, you know, I've been in your living room, in your car drive, on the way to work, on the way to DSG Park for the better part of 3 years. And if you've been reading me, I've been on your phone, tablet, laptop, Twitter timeline for the better part of 5 or 6 years. And so it feels like a member of the soccer community, a member of the American soccer family, you know, is really hurting in that regard, Mark. And this is just on top of a year that has brought lots of bad news. And then particularly through the pandemic has just, you know, we have faced death on so many levels and scales and in so many twists and turns. And so now we're facing death in another reality of someone who I've never met in real life. I've had some DMs with, some emails with. I am on the TSS Scouting Network, scouting Anthony Robinson of Fulham this year. And part of that community's hurting. And, you know, the fact is, Father Time's going to win this battle. And unfortunately, far too soon for a fantastic human being and someone who has made me a better, happier person and a better watcher of soccer and a better soccer podcaster.
Yeah. We are going to miss Daryl. It's pretty weird. I'll just add, like, I think everybody kind of feels this way. It's always weird to experience the fact that we are sort of already eulogizing a person who hasn't died yet, but he has gone home, as Taylor said on the podcast yesterday in the introduction, he's gone home, you know, to be at peace with his family and to go, to pass on into the next realm, surrounded by friends and family and, you know, not in the hospital. It's very, Matt said it nicely at the beginning of the podcast. This is kind of beyond the framework of a soccer podcast, but also part of my everyday life as a rabbi. It's a major responsibility of what clergy do. I don't know that you really need a rabbi for much in truth other than, to do the kind of work that happens when people are thinking about what happens, you know, when you die and after you die. So it's kind of a funny throw to me in the sense that, like, you know, what hat am I wearing? Cause I am with you, Matt. I think you said it really well about what, Taylor and Daryl have meant to American soccer. I think that they take, their podcast very seriously. I've always been stunned at the breadth of their knowledge, like the degree to which they prepare. I mean, if anybody who's never really listened to the show, or wants to just be stunned into awe with the level of detail, go back and listen to any of the, previews they've done for a World Cup, both the men's and the women's. And sometimes, I mean, like, I'm pretty sure I listened to, like, Daryl and Taylor banter about what made the, women's Nigerian team, you know, strong and what their challenges were for like 15 minutes. And I couldn't possibly name a single player on the Nigerian, national women's soccer team. And that's just amazing. They could do that with the Bundesliga. They could do it with La Liga. They could describe Champions League teams. They knew, MLS. I mean, they knew their whole roster's up and down. And they were experts, of course, in English Premier League. They're just remarkable soccer talents and brains. But on top of that, like, they're really funny. They're very genuine. A number of people on Twitter today have pointed out how, Taylor has kind of like emotionally and thoughtfully carried the load right now and just been a real rock for the rest of, you know, kind of soccer Twitter who are like pouring things out. Anyways, you know, in my role as like soccer _ rabbi, you know, the first thing I want to say or the last thing I want to say to conclude the thought is how wonderful these guys are as human beings, but also as soccer human beings, that they just really add a lot to the soccer community. In my role more as rabbi, you know, people have different theological views of like what happens after we die. And I just want to share two really simple ones, both of which are either overly simplistic or maybe give us pause. Like, I'd like to think that Daryl will go on to a place, if we're going to be very literalist and very concrete, where it's always Saturday, there's always a match on, he's always got a front row seat, you know, the sun is always shining, and the ball always goes into the top 90. That's not my theology per se, but I will say that, like, you know, we exist as more than just our collective memories and our existence and our experiences in this world and in this plane. Our souls, our energy, you know, what makes us us goes on in some other form to some other place. And We never truly die. We just kind of continue into the universe in another kind of phase of being. That's my take. So, you know, Daryl, speedily to your rightful home, and I wish you all the best, and I wish all the TSS family and all the American Soccer Podcast family strength and comfort in a time which is going to be hard, because we're going to miss this guy, because he's a great person and a great voice in the American soccer community.
Yeah, well said, Mark. You know, I just edited. I don't think that if he was before, I don't think Daryl's listening to us now. Maybe we've gotten one or two clicks from them who, you know, want a take on a recent happening involved with the Rapids. But in any case, Daryl, thinking about you, you're a good person. You're a fantastic podcaster, and you were a treasure and an amazing contributor to this community. And nothing that has happened in the last 2 years for you medically, and nothing that happens going forward will ever change that. Mark, let's get on to some. I'm not even going to try and make a witty transition because of how bad I feel about that. But in any case, listeners, we didn't podcast last week, and we didn't because the Rapids were supposed to play potentially three games, and we had another scenario where we previewed a game that ended up not taking place. On October 12th, 2020, MLS, in conjunction with the Colorado Department of Public Health and the Environment, unilaterally announced that they would be postponing Rapids games for the next 3 days. That would include the game that they were supposed to play at the Seattle Sounders, the home game against Real Salt Lake that, in theory, although I don't know if this was going to change based on the fact that initially the two games against the LA teams were going to take place but not have fans, and then they got postponed. But in any case, the RSL game that was supposed to be on the Sunday, and then the October 21st game against Sporting Kansas City that was supposed to be Wednesday of this week, that will now not take place in the Rapids right now, scheduled to have their first game back being this coming Saturday, October 24th, against Sporting Kansas City. Mark, as we kind of talked about last week, or last podcast, and as I've written about since, like, there's no more dates for you to make this work. Like, MLS is going to have to postpone the regular season or not play during the international window, with the Rapids playing every 3 days in order to complete all of their 23 games. They now have 5 games that do not have a place on the calendar between today and November 1st or November 8th. Decision day, and so now it's come out that the plan is for any teams that are unable to complete all of their 23 games, and look, there's still other teams getting tested, another team could have a flare-up in the final 2 weeks of the regular season and have to have things shut down, that they will be going to a points-per-game measure, and those games will not be made up, either in being rescheduled, or as you had kind of prognosticated, a notion that the Rapids would be forfeiting the games that they would not be able to play due to, I mean, just the legitimate, now borderline class action lawsuit that several Western Conference teams have against the PIDs, in that at no fault of our own, our schedule is being altered, and it's not our fault, and now we don't know what to do and how to deal with that, and making us make up that game such that if we're in the playoffs, we're playing on short rest isn't fair to us. The Rapids didn't get their act together, or were extremely unlucky. You should give us the 3 points. That's kind of a big hodgepodge. I know a lot of this was kind of sussed out last week, Mark, when we decided it wasn't worth podcasting, because who knows if the game against Sporting Kansas City, an away match, actually takes place. But your thoughts over what we've kind of experienced and the various news dumps of the last 2 weeks.
Blah. it's just, it's very hard to figure out what to do with this situation. Like, we've talked at length about, you know, what a COVID season looks like and our fears and our anxieties. I think my new fear and my new anxiety is that the 2020 season will have unfairness to it, you know, that this season and whatever results come out of it will be marked with an asterisk. So if the Colorado Rapids don't play as many games as the other teams in the Western Conference and go on point per game, and the league goes to points per game for who makes the playoffs. At last I looked, the Rapids were on, I think, 1.46 points per game.
They would be in fifth in the Western Conference right now by points per game, 11th right now on point total.
Yeah, it's problematic. I love that word. That word is such a dodge. It's overused, but like, I got into it on Twitter with a couple Rapids fans who thought like, well, we have, you know, we have more points than Vancouver right now, or we're close on points, and we're a better team than a bunch of these teams in the Western Conference, therefore we deserve to go there. But like, there needs to be something taken into account for the fact that they didn't play as many games. There needs to be something taken into account for the fact that there were a bunch of teams that they will not play and who might rightfully deserve a 3-point forfeit out of that, but the league decided they're not giving 3-point forfeits for the games the Rapids won't play. Hypothetically, if the Rapids don't wind up, you know, playing all 23, which looks almost certain. To me, it doesn't seem fair. Moreover, beyond the fact that it doesn't seem fair, if the Rapids are granted a spot in the playoffs on points per game and displace another team, and hypothetically, if they go on to win the Western Conference or if they go on to win MLS Cup, it'll always have this asterisk over it. You know, people will be like, they didn't deserve to be there in the first place. It'll be like 2010 when the Rapids were like a just barely 500 team who weren't that great, but then, you know, had to put on a really good playoff run and picked themselves up a cup. You know, a lot of people say like, well, they weren't the best team that year. And, you know, they didn't win Supporters Shield. They've never won Supporters Shield. Do they really deserve to win it? The answer is like, yeah, that's how MLS Cup works. It'll be like that, but like times 10 in the sense that the Rapids won't have fully earned a spot in the playoffs to begin with. That's my take. I know a lot of Rapids fans are going to not like that. And I respect that. I get it. And I think, you know, you play the hand you're dealt. You just play the season. So, I don't know. Matt's smirking. I feel like maybe he either agrees with me completely, but won't say that out loud because he doesn't want rotten eggs thrown in his car, or he completely disagrees with me and he's going to destroy my argument right now.
I think points, here's where I'm not sure I come down on either side of that fence that you're forcing me to jump on one side or the other of, Mark. I think the issue I have is sample size. You know, we have seen teams in MLS, you know, the Rapids have played 13 games this season. You know, if we're just taking random 13 games in a row samples of MLS years past, we have seen teams go on 10, I think the record's 17 from the Portland Timbers, but I probably should have looked that up beforehand. In any case, we have seen a team in MLS go 13 games where, you know, maybe they you know, win 7 and only lose 1, or go 13 games unbeaten. We have seen teams go 13 games without a win. We have seen the Rapids start a season, 0 wins, 9 losses, and 2 draws. And so based on those extremes and the level of streakiness that we get within this league, and based on how things often come in bunches, you know, things are either going terribly for a lot of teams, or they're going great, or it's just, you know, total chaos, every single result is its own thing in a bubble, no quarantine pun intended there, folks. And so, you know, based on that, Mark, I could look back on, you know, when an MLS team you know, starts on the road because they're opening up a new stadium and they play terribly, and if we take those first 10 games out of the year and extrapolate that over a 34 game season for points per game, that team is comfortably winning, if not contending, for the wooden spoon. Then they open up a new stadium, maybe sign Wayne Rooney, Lucheroo goes off and everything, you know, you win 7 out of 11 or something like that, and you're on a clip that would comfortably win the Supporters Shield if it was actually going to be awarded. And so I think that's the issue that I have, is where is that line? If the Rapids play only the 18 games, the 13 they've played so far, and the next 5 that they have scheduled, and, you know, is 18 a large of enough sample size that we can say, like, yeah, that's comparable to where we can take points per, you know, there is, in that sample size, it's big enough that we've averaged it out for the noise that you get to actually get enough signal. We know one game is definitely not enough. We know ideally 23 would be the most, but I mean, you know, if we're talking about how we've seen the same team over the course of 12, 13 games in two separate periods of 13 games in a single season be wildly inconsistent. Now, obviously, there's many aspects about the 13 games the Rapids have played that are not of the same sample size, because three of them were in Orlando, two of them were in the before times, and I guess what, five, so then they've played eight since then, and in theory they'll have another five that is another chunk in this post month off that they've had, and you know, they had two training days and then another training day, what, this would have been 2 weeks ago, and then they've had you know, about a half squad going back to last Monday, and then gradually getting people back potentially from injury, and the players who and staff who tested positive who since had their 14-day quarantine period. And so that's the question that I have, Mark, is 18 close enough to 23 to where we can go based on points per game? Is 21's probably enough? I think 20's probably there. Is, you know, roughly a quarter less games enough? And so that's the question that I have that I'm not sure that I have an answer to. And in this, like many aspects of the decisions that MLS has had to make this year, there are no easy answers. There are no good answers, just varying degrees of bad. And do you want to pick the least bad decision that, albeit, is going to have a bunch of teams wringing their hands? Because, I mean, okay, Mark, like, let's say we're going to talk about this. Let's say the Supporter Shield gets awarded. Let's say the Rapids end up winning their final five games they've had because they've had a month of rest off and everything. And then so by points per game, they're ahead of, you know, Toronto FC, Philadelphia Union, the support, and the Seattle Sounders by points per game, but don't have the same amount of points. And so that's the question that I have that I'm not sure I have an answer to. I can understand teams that are not the Rapids complaining because it's in their benefit to argue they should have to forfeit games so that we get 3 points for having to not play a game that we could have potentially not won. And I could understand Rapids fans arguing for points per game because it's advantageous for them. They go from being not in the playoffs to fifth, you know, just one spot away from hosting a home game. So I don't know that I have an answer. This is a crappy situation, Mark. What I do know is the Rapids have 5 games in order to deal with that and only play, you know, and just control what they can control. And I have not a lot of certainty about what that's going to look like, either this coming Saturday or in the 4 games that come after that. Is there anything that we really have to say about this, Mark? I mean, I feel like
we're gonna talk about Supporter Shield next, which is a related concept, because a lot of this is in the realm of, like, it's kind of arbitrary. It's not arbitrary per se, but, like, you know, one of the jokes people make all the time about Major League Soccer is, like, the rules are being constantly made up all the time. You know, like, my favorite example is when Jermaine Jones was assigned via a blind draw in an envelope to one of 3 teams. A rule that Major League Soccer just made up. Another one that's wonderful all the time is the discovery rights thing. You find out that a player, that the discovery rights for a player were actually held by another team. And the whole concept of the word discovery is just ridiculous. That, like, hypothetically, at some point, you know, Lionel Messi is going to come to Major League Soccer, and one team in the league is going to have to pay the Columbus Crew $50,000 for the discovery rights because the Crew, quote unquote, discovered Lionel Messi. You know,
yeah. Like, or the you know, I've had conversations with people in the league, like, how teams have, like, weaponized and used the waiver wire for things that it's not actually meant for. So no, that's a good point, Mark. I guess the argument that I have for going points per game and then just, you know, the games that were supposed to happen, you know, just never existed, we don't count them, is because of the unbalanced nature of the schedule, there's an inherent arbitrariness in which games have to be forfeited by the Rapids, because the Portland Timbers and Sporting Kansas City have both been inconvenienced by this scenario. They're going to have to play a double game week at no fault of their own in the final 2 weeks of the season. Well, I guess, no, it wasn't Sporting. Who am I thinking of, Mark? Who were they supposed to play with the game? Was it Portland and Sporting? Was it Portland and LA? No, it was Portland and the LA Galaxy. I can't even remember. That's how many of these games have been postponed. But it just so happens, because of the way that MLS put the schedule to have 2 open midweek dates, the week of November 1st and the week of November 8th, that the first 2 games that got postponed got moved to that. And there's an inherent randomness to how that schedule was assorted. And just because those games came first and those teams were inconvenienced and there was room in the schedule, they now have to play their games. Why should it be the game against Portland Timbers that gets played and not the game against the LA Galaxy? On top of the inconsistency of, even without all these postponements and potential cancellations, the Rapids were slated to play Real Salt Lake 4 times on the record for their 23 games for the regular season. They will play the Vancouver Whitecaps 0 times. They were already on schedule, only going to play LAFC once. They have yet to play the Portland Timbers or the Seattle Sounders. They were scheduled to play each of them only twice. Those two teams have played the Vancouver Whitecaps I don't even know how many times. Like, on some level, we have to acknowledge this schedule is so ridiculous that just because of the arbitrariness of who teams are playing based on geography and room in the schedule and how can we do this without having a COVID blow-up, that, you know, this random event, potentially random, potentially self-inflicted wound that happened to the Rapids is going to benefit some teams just because of the randomness of that schedule and the timing of it. You know, when I'm sure the Vancouver Whitecaps right now would be saying, we would have loved to have had, you know, the Rapids on the schedule for early October in this scenario. And so in that, the teams, in that, since all of the postponed games are not going to be made up, but some of them will be, it feels like we're on some level arbitrarily or randomly rewarding some teams in having the Rapids forfeit them as opposed to others.
Yeah, I'll just say, to your point, I mean, I'm two thirds of a way through a very long article called MLS 2020 According to G+, the overperforming, the underperforming, and the ugly, which is asking the question, like, if we use the new metric at American Soccer Analysis, G+, which kind of tracks everything that happens on a soccer field and then says, like, what are the odds that that results in a goal? If you take all that math and you throw it in a blender and you compare it to points per game, about two-thirds of the results in the league make sense. A small percentage, like one-sixth of the results in the league, are overperforming, and one-sixth are underperforming. One of the best ways to explain why overperformance or underperformance happens is this unbalanced schedule. So, like, Orlando's a good example. They're overperforming, and they've been playing, like, Nashville, Miami, and Atlanta more than all the other teams in the league, which Nashville's an expansion team, Miami's an expansion team, and Atlanta's playing terribly. So that's why Orlando is outperforming their G+. Another team that is just like that is Portland. Portland, according to G+, are negative 1.72 goals against their opponents. They should be kind of mid-table or lower, and they're in the top three in the Western Conference. And one of the reasons for that is that somehow, or based on this unbalanced schedule thing, they didn't play SKC or FC Dallas at all this year, and they won't play them at all this year. They avoided SKC all season, and they got to play the LA Galaxy 3 times already and get to play them one more time. So, you know, and who knew in Don Garber's, you know, Manhattan Paradise that the LA Galaxy were going to be terrible and SKC were going to be good? He couldn't, but, like, the schedule had to be unbalanced and that's how it played out. And that's a really good explanation of why kind of all of this at the end of the season is going to be kind of like, it's all made up. Winning the trophy is really nice. Does the supporter shield really mean much in such a wackadoo schedule?
Yeah, I mean, so let's actually get into it, Mark. And we actually have an update. I didn't see this until just a minute ago. So the Supporter Shield Foundation, at Supporter Shield, no apostrophe, on Twitter, is the so the Supporter Shield Foundation exists to promote and project the MLS Supporter Shield. Currently resides in LA, in possession of I don't know which group, or maybe it's just collectively the 3252 of LAFC. Jack Bell thinks you serve food to me. That's probably an inside joke that I'm not catching up on. So in any case, 2 days ago, Supporter Shield Foundation tweets out an announcement from the board of the Supporter Shield Foundation. After much consideration and discussion, the Supporter Shield Foundation has decided to forego awarding the Supporter Shield for the 2020 season. This is not an easy decision to make, with the inability for supporters to attend and fill stadiums with passion. However, we feel as though the current climate goes against the spirit of the Shield. The Supporter Shield Foundation stands with our players and supporters in knowing that this year has been one of many challenges, and we commend the support and effort given to making the best of the 2020 season as it has been. With no 2020 winner in the house to the Shield, we will be taking 2021 as a means to spread the word and spirit of the Shield across the entire league. We look forward to educating supporters on the Shield's history and passion, as well as welcoming new supporters groups to MLS. As long as it can be safely done, the Supporter Shield will be going on tour in 2021, so as many supporters as possible will be able to see and learn about the wonderful symbol of North American soccer. On behalf of the Supporter Shield Board, we hope everyone remains safe. We look forward to awarding the Shield to the winners of the 2021 season. Updated tweet, Mark, as of 10 hours ago at time of recording, so this would have been what, like probably noon Mountain Time on Monday, folks. The Supporter Shield Foundation Board would like to provide an update. We are currently holding meetings with supporter group representatives about the original decision in light of new information and feedback we have received. A public update will be forthcoming. So I think, first of all, Mark, we have to acknowledge the Supporter Shield is technically not the official trophy of Major League Soccer. The U.S. Soccer Federation runs the Open Cup as their main cup competition, in the same way that the cup competition in England is the FA Cup, not the Premier League Cup. The MLS Cup is obviously officially awarded through Major League Soccer, and the Supporter Shield was kind of this very organic, grown out of the Independent Supporters Council as a way to recognize the regular season champion and also kind of fill in that void you had where most teams, most soccer clubs and leagues around the world think about winning the title as winning the league, as in being the best team, having the most points in their regular season or in league play, as they would probably refer to it as. And so there's kind of a, MLS is kind of walking this line between, well, yeah, we want another trophy partially because of marketability. We want to market up the grassroots aspect of the fact that supporters do it. They own it. You know, it's given by the supporters to the team. The team celebrates it with it. And then now it resides in LA under the care of the 3252 with LAFC, rather in, you know, Bob Bradley's office or somewhere, for example. But then also MLS walking this line, well, yeah, we're an American league that doesn't celebrate regular season titles. Otherwise, you know, like, how many rings would Peyton Manning have? It's all about winning in the playoffs and then winning the final game or the final series that you have in the playoffs, rather than raising a regular season championship banner. So there's an aspect of, we need the Shield in order to have legitimacy within the greater soccer world, but we also can't control this because the supporters brought it out because we didn't, and we didn't bring it about because we wanted to emphasize the playoffs and MLS Cup and have that be our key marketable big moment thing that we put up on a literal and marketing and pedestal, so to speak. So I think the last 48 hours for a lot of people was an education about the origin of the Shield and who actually owns it and operates it, in the same way that there's actually a committee that oversees the Stanley Cup, Lord Stanley's Cup, and could randomly decide to, you know, make the Stanley Cup be the official trophy of some might hockey league somewhere, that they just every single year vote unanimously that the Stanley Cup will be awarded to the winner of the playoffs in the NHL, as it was awarded to the Tampa Bay Lightning just a couple weeks ago, Mark. So there's, there's an aspect of the league doesn't control it, the supporters group controlled it. I've since heard from a couple of people that apparently this decision was made and people weren't checking their Discord or their means of communication, so some people didn't get to vote, and this decision was kind of made unilaterally and, instantaneously. And so there's kind of a question of leadership there, and people weren't on their phones because it was over the weekend and quarantine. So there's a educational aspect of what does the Shield actually represent, who actually runs and gets to control the Shield, how this decision actually get made, and the reality that, like, you know, we're still going to have a regular season champion. At the end of the day, though, Mark, the two teams that are wringing their hands most about this are players and staff of Toronto FC and Philadelphia Union, the two teams at the top of the table in the Supporter Shield standing. And as a, I think this is a George Carlin quote, Mark, when he's going on a rant about board games, and he's like, it's not a meaningless dumb game when you're winning it. You know, like, if you're first and absolutely cleaning up at Monopoly, it's the biggest thing in the world, and it's awesome, and you should keep doing it. If you're last in Monopoly, it's just a dumb board game. I'm gonna flip it over when I inevitably declare bankruptcy anyways. Mark, your thoughts on this whole kerfuffle that we now have a recent update on, that might become obsolete by the time people listen to this on Wednesday.
Nice. I love those. I love those long conversations we get really into that no longer are relevant by the time you're listening to this podcast. I am of the opinion that I like the original decision, that the Supporter Shield is based on a regular 34-game balanced season, and then if you don't have that, you have a 23-game season, it doesn't necessarily mean as much. I think it's great that the fans, the supporters groups that are responsible for maintaining and organizing the Supporter Shield can say, like, hey, we're not going to give it this year. I think that, like, Greg Vanney on Twitter was the coach most notable for kind of crying about it and saying, like, it wasn't fair. He kind of whined that, like, oh, my players work so hard, and, you know, Toronto's way up in the standings. It's like,
you got to play Montreal and Vancouver a million times.
Right. Right. And my take is basically, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying for just this year, like, we're not going to award the Supporter Shield, and for the league to say we're going to give a kind of regular season champion trophy, you know? They can make up a name for it, you know, they can make it, it can be a shield in a different shape, you know? It could be a buckler, it could be a tower shield, you know, with a cylindrical, you know, long thing. It could be like those things that Greek phalanxes had. You know, like those long, like, badass, cool thingies. I don't know. Like, it, you know, it could just be a little, you know, metal spoon to kind of be the offsetter of the wooden spoon. It could be a silver spoon. It could be a platinum spoon. They could do whatever they want this year. The league could do something fun, and it will never take away from the fact that the team that had the most points at the end of the season was the team with the most points at the end of the season. Like, you don't need, you know, the Rapids. For those of you who pay very close attention to the Rapids, they have an end of the year awards ceremony where they invite, you know, a couple of media and a couple of, big supporters to it. And they give out their, you know, MVP and defensive player of the year and goalkeeper of the year and, you know, a bunch of humanitarian of the year. They give out a bunch of awards. They do that when they're the worst freaking soccer team on the planet. I mean, I remember,
Mark, I organized the article with the rest of the press corps in, like, semi-gesture rebuttal of that with our own press season awards.
Yeah, I remember. In, like, 2017, it was a great article. I remember in 2017 thinking, like, how are we giving any awards to anyone for ever anything? This was the worst season ever. But that's how it is, you know? Like, the fact that it's not necessarily entirely justified also still means that you could kind of, going back to our comment about the envelopes, you could kind of make it up as you go along, and that's all right.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, like, what could we, I mean, since, you know, what did they call the COVID Cup, Mark? Didn't that have a name, and wasn't that all, like, you know, we made up a random trophy for that. The MLS's
back tournament?
The MLS's back tournament, yeah, so make another one of those trophies, you know, it can be, like a gold-plated continental tire for all I care, and then put that on a plaque and say, you know, the Continental Tire 2020 MLS Regular Season Championship, and then give them to that, and I mean, that is far more legitimate than the Armadillo Trophy that ever existed. And I know supporters groups, probably who didn't vote on this decision on the Shield, who celebrated the, you know, the Dillo Cup far more than they probably should have. So I would be fine with the league doing that. At the end of the day, you know, the functional, you know, you're not getting a trophy that's going to count in terms of, like, your trophy cabinet of, you know, how many that Toronto FC's actually won, or certainly Philadelphia Union, who've yet to win a major trophy. So I can kind of understand where their gripes are at. You know, Greg Vanney's trying to rack things up for a team that's been an aspiring super club in MLS 3.0. Jim Curtin actually wants to be able to say, we want some hardware. You know, it's kind of like going over the guys at Sons of Ben and, you know, saying, like, we worked really hard, we wanted to win you this trophy, you voted to effectively eliminate us from winning this when we win one game against Toronto FC and we got a real shot at this. You know, but the functional things that you're still getting are still going to be there. Like the regular season champion is still going to be the number one overall seed in the playoffs. They will only play home games as long as they are in the MLS Cup playoffs. They are still going to get their Champions League spot as they would have normally, and presumably based on seeding more so than actually winning the Shield, you know, they'll get whatever player bonuses that will still be in effect there. I'm sure that they can force majeure write that in for the players who really wanted them. And also the extra allocation money that they'll also get from finishing first in the overall table. So really the only thing that you're not getting is being able to check the box of saying you actually won the trophy and the photo opportunity. And I can understand where there is a gripe for that. But you know, again, I continue to point to, the schedule is unbalanced. It actually had some form of balance, though it was imperfect in years past, and this year it's completely out of whack in that regard. And so, in that mark, like, if Vancouver ends up crashing out and not making the playoffs, and if Montreal ends up crashing out and not making the playoffs, like, we were going to look at this with a little bit of side eye. I would love to see, I would love to have somebody compare, like, the strength of schedule that every single team will have ended up playing. And will it just so happen, Mark, that the Seattle Sounders, who've gotten to play the San Jose Earthquakes and the LA Galaxy and the Vancouver Whitecaps, are top of the Western Conference, and Toronto FC, aforementioned, have played the two other Canadian teams, both of whom at best are bubble, middling, mid-table, last team in, first team out, you know, just also happen to be at the top of the, you know, the two conference standings, is something that should not be lost in us in this regard. Mark, shall we get to the Rapids maybe actually playing a game?
Games! But the last time we did this, I think have we done two previews of games that didn't actually happen?
I believe so. I think we previewed LA Galaxy, and for we sure. Previewed LAFC.
Yep.
And I think we previewed Sporting Kansas City before everything got shut down. So this will be...
We previewed three teams three games that didn't actually happen.
Yes, we are now in a previewception, Mark, because we will be previewing a game that the Rapids are supposed... or previewing a game against a team who the Rapids have since had a game... We previewed a game against Sporting Kansas City. That game did not happen, and now things have come full circle. The snake has eaten its tail, and we are now previewing another game against Sporting Kansas City that also might not happen. And depending on who you ask, Mark, some Rapids fans think that this should be a de facto six-pointer game, or I guess 2 points for a draw, and double the goal differential benefit. But in any case, Mark...
It's like Groundhog Day.
Yes, it is absolutely Groundhog Day. So, listeners, as scheduled right now, the Colorado Rapids are scheduled this coming Saturday, October 24th, to play Sporting Kansas City at Sporting Kansas City at Children's Mercy Park at 6:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. At time of recording, Mark, the Colorado Rapids, we are either 13/23rds, we are anywhere from 13/18ths to 13/23rds through the 2020 Colorado Rapids season. They have played 13 games. They have 19 points. That is a 1.46 points per game. They have 5 wins, 4 losses, and 4 draws, and a +5 goal differential. On point totals, they are 11th in the Western Conference. On points per game, they are 5th in the Western Conference. They'll be playing Sporting Kansas City, who have 30 points off of 18 games played. That puts them 3rd in the Western Conference on points. They have 9 wins, 6 losses, and 1 tie, and a +6 goal differential. Sporting Kansas City has had to change things up, Mark. Alan Pulido has not been available. We have seen Eric Hurtado do some yeoman's work with a goal in the last two games. Gianluca Busio continues to kind of play the round robin of various different positions. Gadi Kinda has stepped in with Roger Espinoza, largely and available, and has done a lot of good things, particularly on the attacking side. Had a fantastic assist to Hurtado on the goal that was a 2-2 draw for Sporting Kansas City. Jordy Mihailovic scored basically the last kick of the game, fourth minute of stoppage time, to make that a 2-2 draw for Chicago instead of a 2-1 win for Sporting Kansas City. Cameron Duke, Mark, a 19-year-old, has made his MLS debut, and Sporting Kansas City has also had to shuffle things up at the back. Matt Beasler has been once again benched by Peter Vermes, and Graham Zusi is officially out for the season with an injury. Jalen Lindsay filled in at the right back position, a 20-year-old out of Charlotte, North Carolina, one of the satellite affiliate youth clubs of Sporting Kansas City is where he is from. Mark, this is a team we've gotten to see a whole lot. This will be a team that will have much less rest than the Rapids. This is a team that is at the top of the Western Conference, and in terms of where they are in points per game, them having 1.67 versus the Rapids 1.46. I'd have to do some math to figure out what like the points per game equivalent of a six-pointer this is, but in any case, Mark, a critical game for both teams. The Rapids want to prove that they haven't been doing nothing and are actually in a position to do something despite having not played a game in almost a month, and obviously Sporting Kansas City wants a win to continue to keep up with the Cascadia teams at the top of the Western Conference.
It's a tough game for the Rapids to come back to. I watched the Minnesota Houston game last night, and Minnesota jumped out to a 2-0 lead despite having two games suspended due to COVID, and they hadn't practiced in a full field intra-squad match in over 10 days. They've been playing basically like socially distanced, you know, and medium-sided games up until yesterday, and they went up 2-0, and then after the half, they gave it all back, and that game ended 2-2, and Adrian Heath chalked the defeat partially up to the inability for the team to train together. That's a really important, you know, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, Matt, when we originally talked, we talked about how the Rapids' continued postponements of games was ultimately going to result in them having to play way too many games at the end of the season and being really exhausted. Well, now they're having the opposite problem. They're overly rested and they're completely flabby and out of training, and it's not a great thing for them. On top of that,
fourth preseason, basically.
Yeah. On top of that, they face an SKC team that I've been doing a lot of stuff with the G-plus numbers, as you guys have been hearing, and either you're all excited about my diving into this G-plus, or you're all still completely befuddled by it and think, like, I don't know what the rabbi keeps doing with this magical math number that I don't understand. But basically, by the metrics that ASA has put together, SKC are the fourth best team in the league. 8.84 goals plus added differential, meaning the model expects that they would have scored 24.12 goals, and the model expects that they would have conceded 15.28. And the math that I did to show how points per game lines up with that basically says, you know, they are good on paper. The math says they're good, and they are good in real life. And part of the reason for that is they've played in 9-1 goal matches. And so that means that they've and drawn two of their matches, meaning overall, overwhelmingly, they play close. They don't get blown out. They've only been blown out one time all season. They're also getting a lot. They have great rotation. They're getting kind of, as you alluded to, like the next man up with Graham Zusi going down in jail and Lindsay coming back in his place. They have 17 different players who contributed 300 or more minutes, which in the research I did in reviewing basically every team in the league is very high. That's a lot of players. They have very few players who've kind of gone Iron Man, and they have a lot of players who've contributed a few minutes here, a few minutes there. And that's a big deal. You know, there's really no drop off with this team. Everybody can do a little bit. I've seen Jalen Lindsay play, for SKC 2 for the last two seasons, against the Riverhounds. He's more of a natural, like, winger. Fullback, you know, defending on fullback is kind of a weakness of his, so you may just want to go right at him. That being said, he's very talented. You know, he's an extremely good dribbler, and he can swing in a ball. He's kind of a right-sided Sam Vines with a little bit less defense, and a little bit more pace, I would say. Not that Sam Vines is slow. He's not slow by any, but Lindsay can really dribble through traffic with speed, whereas you kind of see Vines kind of go straight ahead. So that's just a couple thoughts. It could be a good game, but I feel like this is not a favorable matchup for the Rapids.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, Mark, in place of Matt Beisler at the back at center back, it's been Winston Reed at left center back, and then Robert Puncak at the right center back position right next to Jalen Lindsay, who's been in for Graham Zusi, and then Amadou Dia, who was very unlucky on the weekend, Mark, to barely not there was a goal that he appeared to have cleared off the line, and VAR ended up taking a look at it and ruled that it had completely crossed the line. So that's the back line for Sporting Kansas City. Like you said, Mark, this is a team that has done a good job dealing with some of their injuries and rotating out their crew. And certainly, you know, they're probably looking forward to having a full week to rest up and prepare for the Rapids and also be fully healthy and fit against the Rapids. I think to your point, like, I'm not even sure that it's worth us doing a prediction, Mark, because I obviously haven't been to training all year since the season got shut down after the first home game. And then obviously we haven't had any media availability for obviously understandable reasons. So I haven't gotten to talk to the players, you know, about how things are going, how they're handling it personally, how prepared they feel. And certainly, Robin Fraser as well, I assume will be having media availability, either Thursday or Friday afternoon. So we'll try and get something, but, you know, Robin, again, for understandable competitive reasons, hasn't been the most, loquacious or detailed in some of his answers, particularly related to fitness of players, injury issues, how training is actually going. And so I don't have a check on in terms of what this team looks like. So they probably have a really good idea of what they look like, and they'll know where they're at going into Saturday and maybe what to expect. Whether or not I'll be able to, you know, we won't be able to guess that at all, Mark, and we're not going to find out. And so I have no idea, but you know, at the 90 minute whistle, you know, at 8:30 p.m. Plus or minus 10 or 15 minutes on Saturday night, we're gonna find out what the Rapids have been doing and whether or not they have regressed, progressed, or just been able to keep pace with what they needed to do over the course of the last month and one day. And I think the results of Saturday night, Mark, will give us a very good indication of what the Rapids the rest of their season will look like, and it'll probably give us a good idea of whether or not they're actually going to be able to compete for the playoffs. I guess, you know, in theory, they could crash out with what happens on points per game, but they're in a good position right now in terms of just having, in terms of just being fifth on points per game. I should say, in the fact that they have fewer games to play, each of these is more magnified than it is relative to the other teams, you know, that still have, you know, that have just played more games. And so in that, each one of these games is more and more like a playoff game, and it's not a super great schedule, Mark. They're at Sporting Kansas City. They've got to play Portland. They've got to play at home to, I think they've only got one home game the rest of the way, and they're also playing at Minnesota and at Houston Dynamo. And so they've got four teams that I would have making the playoffs probably, and then Houston, who's probably right now treading that line, but at Houston is probably not the game you want to go to, counting on a result on decision day, especially if that game's even more magnified just because you're playing fewer games. So then the points per game implication of that, you know, would be, you know, multiplied by, you know, take that points per game implication, and it would be, I'm going to actually do the math now, folks, since I've mentioned this so many freaking times. So let's see. So it would be 3 points. This would be times, let's see, they're not playing. So it would be times 23 divided by 18. So effectively, Mark, it's a 3.8333 never ending. So effectively, like, each game is now a 3.83 recurring pointer, as opposed to a game that's worth 3 points in terms of how many games that they'll play relative to other teams. And so that is very significant. Mark, do you actually want to give a prediction, or you know, anything else that you have to say about this match?
I the only prediction I'm going to make is I think they're going to play this game, guys. I think I have jinxed. We have jinxed by previewing three games that didn't happen. I feel like this one's going to happen. I don't think saying that is going to jinx it. That's my only prediction. Matt?
Retweet favorite. I'll say the exact same thing. And, of course, that means congratulations to Sporting Kansas City on not having to play the Rapids after they get a positive test Saturday morning. Okay. Mark, tell our let's get out of here. This show's been a mess. I want to thank every single one of you for listening all the way through to this end. We appreciate you. Mark, tell our lovely listeners about how they can support our podcast.
Our two sponsors are Icarus FC, makers of fine, lovely kits for your Sunday league, your professional squad, your youth team, or just a whimsical birthday that you've always wanted to have your own kit for, Icarus FC, and Roughneck Scarves, the fine purveyors of quality warm scarves. If you'd like to keep your neck warm for the upcoming winter, you may want to go out and purchase
a batch of custom-made Roughneck Scarves. They also have non-custom ones from a variety of teams across the world. And, of course, it's COVID-19. They're making face masks, folks. So go ahead and give our two sponsors a look. And Matt's going to tell you how you can check out more information about me and him. And I'm just going to plug it one more time. I think, hopefully, ASA American Soccer Analysis will be dropping part two of the overperforming, the underperforming, and the ugly on their website soon from me.
Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi and at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our written musings, Rapids related, or otherwise at the aforementioned American Soccer Analysis and Last Word on Soccer. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review, share us on social media. You can follow us on the Twitter machine at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskAPHL. Email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. And if we bring even further monetary value to your lives, you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/rapids96podcast or denverpost.com/HTHL for a lot of great digital for a great deal on the digital content of the Denver Post sports page. Listeners, we'll see you next week, and hopefully we've actually got a game to review. See you then.
Peace.